Interview with Wolf Leonard, 22nd of December, 1965.
Did you ever think of going, joining the ICS, the Indian Civil Service?
No, because I was overage.
Oh, I see.
I thought I would get into the Home Civil.
Mm-hmm.
So I left it until my last year. And that was a year too late for the Indian Civil, but you could take what was called the cadets.
The cadets, yes.
And as I was, did worse than I thought I should, and would have only got something like the Inland Revenue, or the first office, I decided to go
out to Ceylon.
To the east.
Mm-hmm. Did you find, when you were out in Ceylon and having to cope with the administration, that helped you at all in this work?
I don't think it's possible to answer that with a yes or no, really. I mean, one's public school life made one more or less what one was, up to a point. And I think public school system in those days was very bad in some ways,
mm-hmm.
but quite good in others, helped one in some ways.
I was especially thinking of the, well, they say that it gives you more assurance and more a sense of responsibility and training in this, all this sort of thing. Does it really?
To a certain extent, I think it does.
Mm-hmm.
As you go up the school, you get more and more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And you take a certain amount of administrative business at schools, which teach you something. And the theory is that you ought to be able to do anything,
mm-hmm.
so that you are not frightened of taking responsibility.
What about university life?
Yeah, it's the same, I should have said. I think English education does tend to make one feel that one ought to be able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that one ought not be frightened of anything.
What about the practical aspects of work? Well, of course, some people are practical-minded by nature, I mean practical with their hands, and others aren't. And I should have thought it would have been helpful for an AGA if he was rather practical.
Yes, I think he is. I think it is. I'm fairly practical. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I'm quite practical. But to give you an example of the sort of thing that happened, I went up to Jaffna
mm-hmm.
as a cadet. I hadn't the vaguest notion about Ceylon or anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But about 3 weeks after I got there, the GA went on circuit, and the office assistant had to go away to Colombo, and I was left in charge of the province. Practically, mm-hmm. I had to make up my mind what to do. 3 weeks after I got to Ceylon for the whole province. I couldn't get into touch with the government agent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I wasn't frightened of it. And the province was in existence after when he came back.
What were your initial impressions of the civil service?
Well, you see, when you come out to a place like that, it's also new that you don't really have an impression of the civil service
as a whole
mm-hmm. at all. I was rather surprised by Ashmore, who was the
Colonial mm-hmm.
Secretary.
Surprised in what way?
In Colombo, he was so cynical.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very clever man, but very, very cynical. And as I think I'm slightly cynical. I rather liked it. But I was rather surprised at the way he talked to Millington and me about the civil service and our jobs.
Mm-hmm. He did say something about the civil service to you.
Yes, he gave us a sort of sketch of what one would have to do as a civil servant.
Mm-hmm.
Very cynically.
Well, I think in that sort of situation it's better than idealism.
Oh, much, much. I'm all in favor of it.
And, of course, your experience seems to be different from some other cadets who just gone out and met the colonial secretary who spoke about losing his croquet match or something like that, and never gave them an inkling of what they were supposed to do, and just send them off.
Oh, no. We were first taken to see a man called Pagden, who was quite good assistant colonial secretary, also rather cynical. And they did tell us something about civil service, and they were quite serious, but cynically serious.
Mm-hmm. And what was the attitude to the people? Did they speak about the people, and about there were the educated middle class coming up at this time?
Yes. You see, one of the things about the civil service in my time was that you didn't say very much about things.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole attitude of the civil service was paternal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Purely paternal. I mean, everyone that I knew almost, I mean, there were some just lazy people and so on, and everything, who didn't want ever to take responsibility or really cared very much. But most of the civil servants, almost all of them, treated the people of Ceylon as if they were their children.
Mm-hmm.
And their attitude was that you had to do as much as you possibly could for them in every conceivable way, but they weren't capable of doing it for themselves. But for instance, I went for a year to Kandy, in the Kandy country, as office assistant, under a very lazy government agent who left practically everything to me. No, it was J.P. Lewis.
J.P. Lewis.
Very old. He retired not so very long after that. But you see, I think 9 out of 10 civil servants always took the part of the Cingalese against the planters.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I mean, and the planters always used to complain that the civil service was against them and for the Cingalese.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it was paternalism of that sort.
Yes, I can quite see, I'm not against this sort of thing, but I was wondering whether when you got this educated Ceylonese group gradually emerging, whether this some of the civil servants tended to be cynical towards their constitutional demands. For instance, I know of an example in 1908, this is Bowes, when they were, 1909, when they were asking for improvements in the Legislative Council, Bowes says, give a Fernando or a Pierce a seat, and they'll be satisfied. They just want a finger in the pie, which has some basis, but which is a cynical attitude, I think.
That was the civil service was against giving any more power than they possibly could,
mm-hmm,
to the Cingalese and the Tamils. And the consequence was that the civil service was much more in favour of the villager,
mm-hmm,
than they were in favour of the educated Sinhalese.
Yes, this is a natural tendency which one found in India too. You see, as the middle class arose and this friction developed, there was a tendency to glorify the villager as a...
Oh yes, all through. And of course, the educated Sinhalese and Tamil was very hostile very often to the government.
To the government.
And just as we were unfair to them, they were unfair to us.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that some of them had an inferiority complex which led...
Very strong, yes, mm-hmm. very much so.
Mm-hmm. Which brought about some sort of aggressiveness.
Yes, and caused great unpleasantness. I mean, there was... I had a very unpleasant thing with Harisandra Sekhar, who was a proctor in Jaffna,
mm-hmm.
who reported me to the governor for hitting him in the face with a riding whip.
Mm-hmm. I think you do mention that when you were passing.
Yes, well, you see, it is entirely untrue.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an inferiority complex. And as I said in my book, I think the probability is that I was pointing with my whip like that
mm-hmm.
to show something to the government agent. And his trap went by, my horse turned like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I mean, I could swear more than with greater belief than many other things, that my riding whip never touched him at all,
mm-hmm.
and that I didn't know that it happened at all.
Yes, I see.
Until he reported me. But that sort of thing was by no means uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
All through one's career, one had to be very careful.
Mm-hmm. So it would be correct to say that because that there was an extreme sensitivity which sometimes led them to imagine slights.
Yes, very much so. But also they not exaggerated. They were slighted too.
I agree. I was just coming to that.
Okay.
There's a typescript autobiography written by Stace, who came out after you. He became a professor in Pennsylvania University.
Oh yes, I corresponded with him.
And he says that one of the faults in British rule, in his opinion, was arrogance, you know, racial prejudice. He's referring not only to the officials, but also to the unofficials.
Oh yes, there's no doubt whatsoever. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't go on. I mean, when I came out, I had no views either way.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, I rather fell into the sort of habit
mm-hmm.
of my people. And but the more I was there, the more convinced I became that it was wrong,
mm-hmm.
and that we were behaving in a wrong way.
Could you elaborate? What do you mean by the general? Was there a superiority complex?
Yes, very strong, mm-hmm. much too strong, and also that there was no self-government really.
Mm-hmm. Was self-government possible at that time?
Yes, certainly, much more than they had.
Oh, you do not mean complete self-government, but.
Limited. Well, of course, they could have sent me, you know, self-government could probably have been introduced. But, I mean, you talked about Gans Barwas.
Yes.
There were Gans Barwas. There were local government roads and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
and schools, which hardly existed. But even those, you see, were run by the officers. Mm-hmm. By the civil service.
Or you wanted more devolution of responsibility?
Much more. There ought to have been. I mean, local government ought to have been in the hands of Sinhalese and Tamils, but it wasn't in the slightest.
But I think when they did start this, I certainly know in the 19th century when they did start local government, their intention was that this would be a training towards self-government.
Yes, but it wasn't.
Perhaps the people didn't take on the responsibility.
It was partly that, but it was also partly that, I mean, when you had the local council meet, it consisted of government agent, mm-hmm. or the assistant government agent in the chair, and three or four or five appointed or elected members.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know really anything about it, and they weren't encouraged in any of the district where I was. They weren't encouraged to take any responsible thought really in it, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Could this in part be explained by the desire of the AGAs to make to run things efficiently? And
yes.
Obviously,
yes.
If one man decided,
yes.
It was.
That was the fruit of it. They wanted to run the things themselves. They knew everything about it, and they could run it. It's obvious that in Hamblin thought, I could run the local government much more efficiently than the people who had had no experience of it at all.
Mm-hmm. But you think that was bad policy?
Very bad, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
Did you feel that even apart from the superiority complex, which perhaps, you could say is perhaps natural, perhaps, but apart from that, did it sometimes degenerate into downright arrogance?
Oh yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, very much so.
Was Clifford very much like that?
Clifford was an odd man. It's difficult to say, because he was very friendly,
mm-hmm.
As long as people kept in their place.
Was he inclined to stand on his dignity?
No, not when I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
If you had presumed, he would, but normally he wouldn't. I mean, for instance, he came and stayed with me in Hamblin Tot, and for 2 or 3 days. And he went and bathed in the bay, with all the people looking on, and didn't mind a bit like that. And we went and were given an enormous lunch by a Malay village,
mm-hmm.
and they all knew him as a Malay civil servant.
Yes.
And he was very affable to them, and not at all on his dignity, but of course he was a great man. He was acting governor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was treated everywhere like that. He would have been very, very down on a white civil servant who presumed on him,
mm-hmm.
more so than on a Sinhalese or Tamil.
Yes, I see. Hmm. Of course, when you look at it, the people's attitude, and especially the middle class attitude to the British, was, they are our rulers. And even if you could build a case for superiority complex, it was not wise from the ruler's point of view to be arrogant. In the long run, it was not wise.
It's not wise, but you, they were everywhere. You came across it. And of course, if you anyone who, I was under a GA called Price.
Mm-hmm.
Who was an arrogant man.
Wasn't he also lazy?
Very lazy, yes. But he wouldn't have stood any nonsense from any town or single ears, as he would say. He wouldn't say. You've got to stand on your dignity, and no nonsense, he would have said, just about that.
Question of government prestige, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the natives must be kept in their place,
mm-hmm.
which he would have said. He wouldn't have said it to you or to a Tamil, but he would have said it to me.
Mm-hmm. Isn't there also a historical explanation for this? the Sinhalese and Tamils had been used to monarchs and this aristocratic system. They paid a lot of subservience to the headman and the like, and they continued to pay this subservience to the new rulers.
Yes, you see, the village, I mean, it depends what you're doing. If you were in Kandy,
mm-hmm.
all the proctors and the middle class, like the proctors, were annoyed with the British,
mm-hmm.
really, because of their arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to be very careful in dealing with them up to a point, but a lot of people behaved very badly to them. And I was never in Colombo, but I imagine Colombo was much more like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so was Jaffna. But in the Hampden Top District, they were all villagers, really, you mm-hmm. see. There were no proctors in Hampdentop.
Yes.
None at all. There were one or two. No, I don't think there were any in Tangor. They used to come from Maltra.
Mm-hmm.
There were no middle class, except one's chief headman.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the whole population automatically regarded the assistant government agent
as their god,
as their ruler.
Mm.
And they liked seeing him and liked coming and making their complaints to him, but they did it like that,
mm-hmm.
always. And if they didn't, you heard the headman say to them, what the devil do you mean by not behaving like that? This is the AGA. This is the Harmer drill.
Mm-hmm. If that's the point I'm making, this subservience which they paid as a natural mark of respect could unconsciously breed some sort of arrogance, at least in some.
Well, I mean, you couldn't help it to a certain. I mean, they looked to you for everything from the administrative point of view. They treated you as the superior,
mm-hmm.
and naturally you felt superior.
Mm-hmm.
But not in the arrogant way that people did towards the educated people. It was like a father to his child.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that in your time, this British habit of rule of thumb, of sending officers out into the bush to learn for themselves, still applied? You had to pick up your job yourself?
Yes. To a great extent.
Mm-hmm. Were you supposed to pick your GA's brains, if he had any?
Yeah, I suppose so. The curious thing was that you were hardly instructed at all. I think what it was that in those days you really learned more from the officer system than you did from the government agent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had an officer system above me, Southall,
mm-hmm.
Who subsequently became a governor. We lived together in the same house. He really taught me how to work, but
mm-hmm.
I was being a very arrogant person from that point of view. Very soon thought that I knew much more about things than he did,
mm-hmm.
and instead of accepting being told you've got to do this, I insisted upon being given more important work. But I think I was more arrogant in that way than most civil servants.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them simply learned from the officer system.
Did you feel that the older hands, the GAs and the like, tended to treat cadets like dirt, you know?
Oh, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. No, they were extremely... well, they all treated me with the greatest respect, really. And... I mean, they. I played a good hand of bridge, much better bridge than they did.
Yes.
And they used to ask me to dinner and that sort of thing. And Lewis was very, very glad to have someone who would work hard. And then Price, who was the only other government agent that I had, was an extremely able man.
Mm-hmm.
But bone lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me a great deal. Let's say, how to run an office, he taught me. He knew exactly, he knew that. But he let one do practically everything. Both of them. And then I got an AGA ship and had nothing to do with them at all. So I only had two government agents.
Mm-hmm. Without wishing to be a theorist, I was wondering whether you could have done with some more instruction and discussion on some theoretical courses. At the start.
Yes, I think it would have been a very good thing if one did.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine to some extent that was later on down.
It was in the 1930s. Certainly.
Because they certainly, in the Indian Civil, you went for a year to Oxford or Cambridge after you'd passed your exam.
That's right.
Which I should have thought was rather good.
Mm-hmm. Some civil servants tended to be cynical about this sort of thing. They, you know, they felt that you should learn on the field. But I agree that you learn a lot on the field. And perhaps theory in England...
I think they would just better see it.
When I referred to theory, I was especially thinking of theories and, well, some sort of detail on land tenure and land problems and land policies in any country, you know, alternative policies and comparisons would have given a person a sense of what he was doing out in Ceylon.
Yes, of course, you came and went out and you didn't know anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
You learned everything from the ground.
I need not have necessarily have been theory here. If you went there, just 1 or 2 months in the secretariat, learning something about the China problem and its history, may I just give you a...
Yes. I think at one time they did, didn't they?
Not that I know of.
I thought they sometimes, the cadet was put into the secretariat to learn a bit. They were not in my time, but I thought later on...
Later on they were put into the secretariat as cadets, but they learned the secretariat routine.
Yeah.
As far as I know. What about this question of routine? Did you... is his thesis other point, his other main criticism, was that there was too much routine, that it was often a question of following precedents. And mere routine. He's not against routine. He believes it has its uses, but he felt it was followed too blindly.
My recollection is that everywhere there was far too much work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of us being underworked, we were overworked.
I agree.
I worked about 16 hours a day, nearly everywhere. Not so much in Jaffa, but in Gandhi, one could only just keep up with it. I used to begin at 7 in the morning, when the tapo was brought to one, and I often was working until 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
In my bungalow. That wasn't altogether, of course some of it was routine, but it was a continual deciding small questions of every possible kind, from land tenure to questions about licenses and that sort of thing.
From your experiences in Kandy and Jaffna, did you feel that the GAs often tended to follow precedence for the sake of following it?
I wouldn't have said that, Mrs. Pierce.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And, for instance, when you were AGA Hammam Thurtur, did you feel that your GA in Southern Province, or Colombo, tended to be obstructionist when you suggested new things?
You see, the great point in my time was, from my point of view, that it took an awful long time to get to the GA on Colombo. There were no telephones.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see.
The only way you could get to them was by wiring. And I was always in favour of not consulting them. I had a government agent who I considered obstructed me.
Mm-hmm. Who was this?
Lushington.
Mm-hmm.
And I defeated him. I also got very badly wrapped over the knuckles for being arrogant to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I got my way.
I think he's the chap which whom States refers to, because as GA, States went out to Goa around 1910.
Yes, he was there.
And Lushington got another cadet transferred, because this cadet was, according to local gossip, was taking an interest in a burger girl. And
yeah.
He was, States brings this up and says he was transferred to Cambridge.
I didn't like Lushington at all. And he, I recommended a headman,
mm-hmm.
a chief headman, very soon after I got there. And he didn't it was a recommendation which had to go to Colombo. And I found in some way or other that he didn't even send on my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wired to Colombo, direct, which was unheard of, and asked them to hold over the position until they heard from me. And it was rather an unpleasant thing, the way he did it. And I won, and he never really forgave me for it.
Yes, I see. Well, I suppose in any field you get a certain amount of pettiness.
Yes. I think that, as a generalization, my experience was that the worst of the system was that the government agents were old,
mm-hmm.
and the climate is trying to old people, and therefore most of the government agents were quite willing to leave responsibility to subordinates, much, if anything.
Did you feel that there was a tendency, there was some sort of lethargy when it came to trying improvements?
Yes, very much so.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yes. And they didn't altogether like a very active assistant government agent that was always bringing up new things and
mm-hmm.
worrying them. They liked to be
peace and quiet.
Peaceful.
Would it be possible to extend this to the centre too in bigger questions?
Not so much, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably depended a good deal on the assistant colonial secretary and colonial
secretary. You see, this is Mr. Newnham's great point. He says that usually the governor had reached the climax of his career and wanted things quiet. He wanted a sort of peaceful age. And the colonial secretary was looking for promotion. And therefore, knowing the governor wanted things quiet, he also wanted things quiet. This is generalization, of course. And the secretariat people also knew that. Would you say that there was this tendency?
It's very difficult to tell if you would never have an assistant government agent.
No.
Clifford,
mm-hmm.
To give him his due, liked you to do things. And he jumped me up, because I did, encouraged me to do that sort of thing. But then that was only in a minor way, because I was very subordinate. I think probably he would have been, go ahead and make that sort of thing active. I think Freddie Bowes, who was principal assistant, liked to be at peace and didn't like to be bothered. But government agents would know that much better than assistant government agents.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that many of the civil servants tended to move in fixed grooves?
Yes, I think they did.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was my point about precedence is allied to this, really. Well, sometimes you can only understand what you're doing when you think of alternatives, really. You might decide to follow the same course, but if you have some other alternative in mind, it's you're all the better for it.
Yes. Of course, my experience was really very little, because my experience was only in Jaffna country for nearly 3 years, where I was left entirely to do what I wanted, really. Then Macandy country for a year. And then on my own in Hermantown. I didn't come across. I mean, the only civil servants I ever came across were the two government agents and Washington. And one office assistant.
Mm-hmm. What about the governors? What did you think of Blake and McCallum?
Oh, they were hopeless.
Mm-hmm. Hopeless in what way?
Well, I mean, they were soldiers and they didn't. They were all pomp and that sort of thing. I don't think they knew what they were doing either, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. I don't think they interfered very much. I mean, they came down and stayed with one and made an awful nuisance. But you really didn't have, I don't think they made much difference. I think Clifford was a very different sort of
thing. Yes, he was. Well, he rose because of that.
He knew what he was doing. And he had views of his own. And he was a civil servant to start with.
What about Pagden? Was he too bureaucratic-minded?
He was, rather, I think, yes.
Because Bowes has also written a book called Bowes, well, not a book, his memoirs, called Bows and Arrows. And he has a vast diatribe against Pagden.
Which of Bowes is that?
Freddie Bowes.
Did he?
It's bound, but in typescript. In Oxford now.
Not published?
Not published. He gave it to Strong, and then Strong gave it to the library.
Really?
And he has a vast diatribe against Tubbs, who came perhaps just after your time.
Yes, after my time.
And Pagden, for their very sort of officious red tape methods.
Stubbs was a colonial officer, Pagden was a civil servant from the Ceylon civil servant.
Did you feel that the secretariat, for instance, tended to breed a type of man who was a essay writer and rather than a practical sort?
We always thought it. The outstation people always said that. Whether it was true, I don't know. Of course, the secretariat made a great deal of difference to one's... They had the final say about one's recommendations, and therefore one rather hated them.
Yes. You never really came across Cumberland and Fraser?
I came across Fraser. He was in the land settlement, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
He was at the head of the land settlement in my time.
Mm-hmm.
I just came across him.
Mm-hmm.
Cumberland I didn't know at all.
Turning to another sphere, there was a feeling among Sydney's civil servants, of course very few of them at that time, that they were kept away from the substantive force and shunted into the judicial line.
They always were.
Mm-hmm.
I think they always were.
This was a tendency, policy,
I'm
was
sure
it?
Sure they were. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was then the secretarial, but one only has to look at the list to see that it was jealously kept in that way. Very markedly, I should have said.
Mm-hmm. Well, my father himself has a feeling about himself and Rock, you see, they felt that they were kept away from the GA ships.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
And the question is, I mean, undoubtedly there was some racial prejudice here. I presume they didn't want to have the a man, the GA having lots of status. I presume they didn't want a coloured person there.
There was that, but you know, you don't mind my saying so, I've heard, I mean, I didn't know your father, but I've heard the Singhalese, I remember now, talking much more against your father because he was coloured than anyone in the civil service would have done themselves. And there was that prejudice. There was the prejudice which probably came from, which certainly came from the white civil service. But of course they also had it against the Singhalese and the Tamils.
Yes, I see your point. I was coming to that. In fact, because Boas argues that way too, but I was speaking to Mr. Strong on this, and he was quite fair on this point, and he said that the civil servants who were above him, he came out in 1913, the Sydney civil servants, were not the type who would have been made GAs. You see, even among the Europeans, he said there were some who would never have been made GAs. Is that correct?
Well, who were they? Can you give me an account?
Well, I'm afraid I haven't gone into the civil list.
Them off at the bottom, in the way that we were started off from the bottom, and made them government office assistants and AGAs, you would find that they were just as good as anyone else.
No, he was not... Not putting this forward as a generalisation.
Wickramasinghe. Cyril Leonard Wickramasinghe. He was appointed in 1912.
Oh, well, he was the one, he was the first, I think he was one of the first Sydney's GAs, and he was undoubtedly a man of ability. And he was, as I said, raised pretty quickly. Well, not all that quickly, but...
No, you see, he wasn't. He went to Matra an office assistant. He then became a police magistrate, district judge Cornigal, police magistrate Colombo, police magistrate Kaltura, police magistrate Jaffna. He'd been 8 years in the civil service then. Additional police magistrate Colombo, 9 years. Now, he got an additional assistant government agent in Colombo after he'd been out 9 years, but he was sent back to the police magistracy the next year. And he'd been 11 years when he was again made additional assistant government agent
in
Colombo.
In 1923, he was made AGA Chillow. I know that. But I intend to go into this point in detail. One has to, you know, take personal...
You'll have to take the whole thing and look through it.
Yes. But Strong's point was that the first few Sydneys who came in, on the whole, were not of the sort who would have been made GAs. But I have some doubts about this point.
Right, very much doubted. I mean, what sort could they be? I mean...
Well, there are some who may have... in a type who tended to share responsibility and may have been weak men.
Well, there are a lot of people who were made GAs who were the same who were white.
Yes, certainly Vaughan in Kandy, right? In 1915, he was known to be a
lot
weak man.
nervous and of ever taking responsibility. And also, of course, I always thought it was an extremely bad thing that to make a man who thought wasn't responsible a judge. I mean, you just want just as much responsibility if you're...
Yes, actually, that is one of the points I had got down here. But perhaps the answer to that would be that in a judicial case, they're bound by... it's within the limits of the law.
Yes, there is that. But you've got to be very... you've got to be able to take your life in your hand.
Well, one of Bose's arguments, he is very much a diehard on this, was that the stability of government would be undermined and that Ceylonese would not be disinterested in local politics and could be worked upon.
Yes, that's what they always said, and of course there's a little in that, but not very much.